today, and we've got a couple of things we're going to go over. Hope everybody has made your New Year's resolutions, and your New Year's resolutions would include, obviously, improving and taking your note business to the next level. I would hope that no one has, already broken their New Year's resolutions, for all of you that may come out and join the gym and have been once since 1st of January. That's what you did, isn't it, Matt?
It is, and I've yet to go, so we'll have to fix that.
And guys, I have to tell you, I was in Minneapolis last week, and when I left there Sunday morning about 5 a.m., it was 26 below zero. So I don't want to hear anybody complain about cold weather where they are, because I know what it's like. So, Matt, let's see. What do we have on first here today?
All right. So first, we've got a question from Charles Sullivan. Charles, I don't believe has a mic, but if he has any follow-up, he will type that into the boards, and then we'll be able to kind of respond that way. So I'll let you kind of go into it, and if you want, I can read it, one or the other.
Very good. Okay, so Charles, let's see, your question. Could you please play? Okay, here we go. Is it ever possible for a note buyer to contact a non-performing buyer or a non-performing borrower, should be, prior to completing the transaction? Charles, I understand that, and I understand completely why you would want to do that, but there is no reason, as far as legal reasons and privacy reasons, that you would be able to contact that borrower prior to you being buying the asset and being the new lender on that. It would be simply, I'm thinking about buying the loan on your house. Can we talk about some outcomes before I decide to buy the loan? I always like to say, Matt, it's like when you're going to an auction and you're buying sight unseen, or buying as is, but you can't go in the house. I always like to go up and knock on the front door the morning before the auction, and just say, hey, look, I'm going to think about buying your house at auction here in just a few minutes so I can kick you out. Can I just get a look around inside real quick? Probably the door slamming in my face wouldn't be a good indication of that anyway. So, Charles, I would not think that would be a good idea at all to contact a borrower. Again, I understand why you would want to do it, especially if you had an interest in modifying the loan. That wouldn't be proper for you to do. So, okay. Any questions from that, Matt, from anybody out there? Let's see. Okay, Mahmood. Let's get Mahmood. Let's unmute them.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Mahmood. So I wasn't on the call last. So Happy New Year,
Bob. Happy New Year to you.
Thanks. I wasn't on the call last week, but in what context was Eddie talking about a borrower interview?
To see whether that borrower would continue to have the propensity to pay, and I think he mentioned that he had done these interviews in the past, especially when he was buying one-off loans. They didn't necessarily do these when they were buying portfolios, but right. On one-off loans they did do borrower interviews.
Right. Well, and let me kind of put that in the context. Now, was this on the performing call or was it on the non-performing call last week?
Performing.
Okay, and in the performing side, yes, I have always done on the one-offs when I'm buying it to own it myself on a performing loan. You can certainly call the borrower and talk to them. As a matter of fact, that's part of what we call the Vindy verification, and I always get a verbal verification on the balances on that, but. I just would not see that happening on the non-performing side.
Okay, that's where the distinction is then.
I think so. Yeah, I've never heard of anybody doing that on the non-performing side. And I don't know if there's any legal issues, Ray, but Ray Drowning, I just don't think, I've never heard anybody doing it, and I would not do it. And then, of course, Ray does also bring up a good point, and if the borrower has filed for bankruptcy, obviously that would be part of that that period of time where you can't contact that borrower anyway. So you wouldn't know if they had filed for bankruptcy and those things as well. So I would stay away from that completely. Let's see. Jackie says if you called only to verify UPB, you might get some other info. Just say that you are not calling to collect a debt. Guys, I just wouldn't do it. I know that's me. If you guys want to jump out there and do it, and Brian, I totally agree with Brian typed in. I thought Colonial asked us not to contact the borrower when buying assets from Note School tapes.
Hey Joe,
did I understand? No.
Joe, let me ask you a question. Would that, if you were to contact a borrower, would that break the non-disclosure agreement that you signed with the seller of that asset, say for us Colonial or anybody else who's selling that asset?
Yes, I believe it would. That's one of the things, and let me kind of make another distinction here. Understand that, good, that's very good, Brian, or Michelle, whoever typed that in, but I agree. It is a clear violation of the non-disclosure that you would have signed with Colonial when you did that. And let me make the distinction that Mahmood was talking about a minute ago there, and you would only call a borrower on a performing loan if you are under contract to buy it. So, for instance, I have I'm buying a performing loan from you, Matt, and you and I have signed a contract, and I am in the process. I've ordered a BPO, I've ordered title, and I want to talk with the borrower prior to closing. I can certainly do that. But when you sign a non-disclosure, and that's completely different than what we're talking about here, and Brian, I appreciate you typing that in, and you're exactly right, and Matt, you are as well. It is a clear violation of the non-disclosure. So please, guys, just don't do it. I mean, it's not something that you need to be doing. It's, you know, we teach you to, you know, once you buy these assets, you're not a professional. There are some states, as we all know, that you have to have a license for debt collection. We know that North Carolina is like that. We know that California is like that. So again, I just wouldn't. There's just no good reason for you to do that, and it would be a clear violation. And you're right, Brian. It could be a RESPA violation as well. Okay, which is a Real Estate Settlement and Procedures Act. So you won't be doing that. All right, so I think we can kind of put that to bed and move on from there. But guys, just again, you want to hire a third party, a servicer, to take care of those issues for you anyway. So Matt, let's move on to the next one there, my friend. I mean, don't get me wrong, it'd be great to do that and get an idea of what your workout strategy would be, but it's not something you can do. All right, Matt, what do we have here? We have Miss Connie West. And is Connie on the phone today? Is she on the call? I can look here, too.
I have her unmuted. Connie, if you're able to speak, go ahead and test that out and see if we're good to go.
Connie? She may have herself muted.
You may, and I think she was saying something about how she was calling in. So,
okay.
It's just... Connie, if you want to try to unmute yourself, or possibly if you need to, she said she's unmuted on her phone, and I'm guessing she put her PIN in. So I'm not sure why she's not coming through. That's odd. So Connie, if you can kind of keep going, maybe turn the volume up on your mic, or kind of test around with that. What I'll do is I'll go ahead and read your question, Connie. I have you unmuted and I'll keep you unmuted. So as you're playing around there, we hear you. We'll kind of let you know that we can hear you then. So, but she's found a piece of property, seems to have a good price on it. And so she sent us the collateral file and she's wanting to kind of go through the aspects of the due diligence. And she also has a question on the status of the land contract. So, her first strategy is, number one, she wants to hit hardest hit funds. Also she's wanting to get it to be a reperforming loan since it's a non-performing asset. Then of course, if all else fails, lastly, she's going to have to foreclose. So kind of she was wanting us to walk through each one of those aspects. Based on that, is there any way to find out if the home buyer is still in the property? So based kind of like what this other person was asking, can she just reach out to the borrower? The answer is no, but how else can she go through some systematic processes to find out, okay, I need to know if this person is still in the property or if someone's in the property, who is in the property?
Okay, so
we'll go through that part.
What do you have there first, Matt? You have the BPO. Is that what you have?
Yeah. So I guess we can kind of just look through the asset itself. What I'll do is I'll pull it over and kind of, all right, hold on a second. I had it. And then of course I didn't. So give me a second.
So Connie, if while Matt's pulling that up, if this house was occupied by the owner of the house, Tennessee is a hardest hit fund state, and that would be something that that you could certainly look into. We have a couple of great case studies on hardest hit funds in Memphis, as a matter of fact. There's in Tennessee, there's I think it's up to a $40,000 payout in the state of Tennessee, which can include past due payments. It can include unpaid property taxes, unpaid homeowners insurance, and it can also pay up to 18 payments into the future. So, yes, if it were occupied, that certainly would be a case for hardest hit funds. Problem is I do not believe, from everything I've looked at this over in the past few minutes, that it is still occupied. I believe it is vacant. So we're going to run through the BPO on this. This is an asset. Matt, it looks like you ordered the BPO on this for Colonial back, gosh, in the spring. Well, in May of 2015. So I'm sure this is something that we bought back then, and there may have been some challenges on something with it that that allowed us not to offer this for sale until when was this first put out for sale, Matt? In October or November?
I'd say probably around that time. I mean, yeah, okay. It takes us sometimes about 3 months to get some of these boarded, so I'm not sure exactly when. But right. The due diligence, like for instance, the due diligence on this, the BPO may have been ordered. The inspection date was 5/13, but we may not have closed for another month. You know, so
that's true.
When
Colonial bought this, when it would have been in a pool, that we would have had a due diligence period on that. We would have ordered the abstract title plot. We would order title. We would order the BPO. So anyway, regardless, it took a while to get this boarded, and so that we could actually offer this for sale in one of the offerings. Okay, so it's in Memphis. It is a 2601 of gross living area. 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house, was built 103 years ago, so that's rather new for Memphis standards. No, I'm kidding. looks like the market rent on this is $850. We did look at Zillow, and I don't know if you're pulling out. $850 is what Zillow indicated the rent was, and you also, we'll pull up Rent-A-Meter in just a minute, won't you, Matt?
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, it's about wrong one. Had the wrong
gross. So there's 1100 Greenwell Ave, and
hold on a
let's
second.
See medium.
There you go.
Okay, so it's so rent is somewhere between $750 and $850, and this would probably be in an area that would there would be guaranteed rent. I can't Section 8. So that would probably be a plus on this, and that would allow you to get top dollar rent out of there as well. So let's go back to the BPO and look at that. Okay, Joe, I can't see where we lost. Okay. So, and David, yes, Tennessee does have hardest hit funds, and you can run there to hardest hit funds site. And again, it's just the last time I looked, or up to $40,000. And last time I looked, which was about 3 months ago, Tennessee had about $180 million left in its hardest hit funds pot. And in Tennessee, very good results. Again, last time I looked, it was somewhere in the hit rate on that, or the win rate on the that was about 70%. In Tennessee. And okay. Tennessee has both judicial and non-judicial. This is a land contract, right? Okay. And Lisa says, pretty high crime area. I know I used to own an apartment building nearby. Yeah, it is. What were the crime stats on it, Matt? Was it a seven or so?
Yeah, and I'm pulling that up now too. It's got a pretty good bit of crime, but it is Memphis, so.
Well, let's not talk about Memphis.
I apologize. It's a great area.
Okay. This is about I think this is about a mile and a half from Graceland as well. So I'm kidding, guys. All right, so are you trying to get to the
There we go. Should be able to see it now.
So what are the cry? I can't make it out, Matt. What does it say?
Are you looking for the color map, or are you looking for actual?
Okay, there's the color map. I just kind of wanted the number. Whatever it is, we know that it's got an elevated crime rate. We know that domestic assault and that type of thing would be elevated in that area as well. So the question is, are the positives in the area going to outweigh the negatives? All right, we're back to the BPO. Comps in the area, the comparable sales looks like they ran anywhere from, well, those are older comps too. 10/11/2013, there was a sale there of 29,000. Scroll on down there a bit, Matt. Yeah, see, those comps are all year and a half old. So I guess that was what was there at the time when this was done in May of 2015. The first comp was normal sale, was alarms length, inferior in gross living area, normal sale, superior in prop in parking, and similar in gross living area. So all three of the comps were there. Bottom line is this, and your compare even your comparable listings, even comparable listings on those are not, they're still 5 months old according to the date of the BPO. Bottom line is that the BPO, the agent that did the BPO, pegged the price at $40,000 quick sale as is. Is that correct, Matt?
Yes, that's correct. So, well, 45 is lower, 44.5 as is,
Okay.
so list price at 50. So yeah,
Right, and then we know that I think you looked earlier, and I think Zillow lists has this at about 59,444. So bottom line is the house is worth somewhere between 40 and 50 on the high side. Let's run on down and look at some pictures of the place real quick, and then we'll look at the title on this, Matt.
Okay. And as someone pointed out, it does have on the BPO that it is occupied by unknown. So
it unknown. Oh, it did. It did say that. Okay, I didn't see it.
So.
Okay, well, if this is occupied, and the only way to know that is obviously after we buy this and we board the loan with whomever it is we're going to have service it, and we send boots on the ground there and a door knocker and have them knock on the front door. This is Tennessee, like I said, it could be a hardest hit funds piece as well. All right, so I think we looked at the house there. There's listing one. Again, not a bad-looking house, in my opinion. I've seen a lot worse. It's a lower-middle, lower-working-class neighborhood. Okay.
Yeah, this was the Rock Top 4. So, yeah, this has been – yeah, I know which pool this is, so – And so Lisa was saying that you can check the utilities for your occupancy.
So, right.
So can you kind of explain, or do you want Lisa maybe to kind of talk about what that process looks like for them so they can kind of...
Yeah, I think Lisa, yeah, let's get her on. She's a very knowledgeable lady, and let's let her walk us through how she does that.
Lisa, go ahead.
Okay, looks like she may be just working on a computer as well today.
Actually, Joe, we were kind of making fun of this yesterday. Lisa, the last Monday, she was saying she couldn't talk because Santa didn't bring her mic. So we were saying she must have been extra naughty this last year because she still hadn't had that mic.
I gotcha. Yeah, Tim, I understand what you're talking about there. Tim says it doesn't look like a 2,600 square foot house. No, that's the right asset. This house is what I'm assuming here. It is a two story, and I believe it does have it's got a big open loft in the second story there. So no, it is that particular house. And Barbara does say you can also call the utility companies to verify if occupied. I'm not going to say the next one. Joe, the ITV for Greenlaw, just based on the note price, is above 49%. When one includes surprise costs, the ITV continues to fall based on those thresholds. Okay. And check the utilities, and she doesn't have a mic. I tell you what, you know, I guess what we need to do, Mike, is or Matt, is we need to take up a collection so we can get Lisa a microphone.
We can pass.
And Lisa does mention that you call the utility company and ask if they are on. If not, ask when they were turned off, and you'll get a good indication there as well. Okay, so let's talk about Jason's question there, and his question is the asking price for that asset, Matt, is what did we say, 23,360?
I believe that's the number, yes. And I can pull that up let me pull that up just so that we can see it. Yes, it's 23,360 for mentoring price, just the normal price, yeah.
So, Joe, that actually, if you're looking at the low value there, the quick sale as is, or Jason, we're looking at a purchase price of $23,360, and we're looking at a low band price of $40,000. So, actually, you're looking at about a 58% investment to value on that one. So is that a deal or not? Obviously, when I'm working on with non-performing, and if I had an interest in this property, I would certainly order my own BPO on this property from local realtor. In my opinion, the house doesn't look too bad. Of course, we're looking at a picture and we're looking at a BPO that was done 7 months ago, 6 months ago anyway. So again, before I pull the trigger on this, I would certainly have to get more information. The indicators that I looked at, such as Zillow, and I think we pulled up a couple of other things there, that this area had finally hit bottom and there was going to be some appreciation this year, very little, 3 to 4% probably in appreciation this year. So if we're looking at the BPO as is value of $40,000, then we're at a 58 ITV. If we were looking at something around $50,000 valuation, we would be looking at about a 50% investment to value. So, well, a little less than that. So, yeah, it could go either way. The positive on this is that if it were occupied and this were something that we could modify and or use hardest hit funds. So let's go over and look at O&E report. And, you know, Rock Top Partners is the current owner of this.
Rock Top was who we purchased it from. So Colonial does own it.
Colonial would now own it, but yeah, as of this, when this abstract report was one, yeah. It was first, Fannie Mae sold it to High Harbor. High Harbor transferred it to Rock Top. So Rock Top, and then of course Colonial purchased that from Rock Top at some time in the future there. Let's scroll on down there and have a look at it. Of course, that's all the plat information, and we would, you know, of course verify that. All right. And it shows taxes are paid as of 2014. The 2015 taxes would have just basically become due in September, October. And so the 2015 taxes would be due now. Okay, yeah, assessed value is $12,000. That's about what it is. So. Not a factor there really. And what else do we have here? That's a recording stamp. And that's just the special warranty deed transferring it from to Rock Top.
So would you say that this and we'll go down to the tax cert next, just kind of confirm that tax on the O&E report.
Right.
This was done in June, so that kind of shows you where we had gotten to at that point. So, yeah, June 3rd right. When this was completed. So.
Yep, so the 2014 taxes are paid. Just remember that interest is paid ahead and taxes are paid in arrears, so that's totally not unusual for the taxes. Your taxes for 2015 typically become due towards the end of the year, end of the tax year, and then they become delinquent sometime after the first of year. Here in Florida, our taxes become delinquent on April 1st here for the prior year. So you're always paying your property taxes in arrears. Okay, yep, so the taxes are paid on it, and certainly that's what Rocktop would have done, and or Colonial when they purchased the asset. There's the assignment. So there was a couple of questions, I think. One question that Connie had, let's look at the assignment. And Connie had asked about should she or would one need to record the land contract? Okay, and typically, sometimes these are going to be recorded and sometimes they're not. If you're going to have to proceed with foreclosure, then obviously you would want to go ahead and record the land contract and move from there. And this one really is already recorded, it looks like. So not a big thing. Tennessee, question was about a foreclosure in Tennessee. Did one in Memphis, I can't remember the address on it right now, last year, and it took about 37 days and cost about $1,800 to get the foreclosure done on that particular piece of property. So again, Rocktop, and then of course, which is Orion, has a recording on that, or has the title on that now, which Colonial would have also. So Matt, I guess the million-dollar question, or the question that really Connie or anybody else on the call here, especially anybody that would be, is there anything else on there that we need to look at? Not really. We can look at special warranty data. You can look at the allonge if you want. The question that should be asked would be, should we buy this? You know, would this be a buy or would this not be a buy? And based on what we have, I would have to say that a newer BPO would be required for me to move forward with this. And if I had an interest in it, that would be what I would do. Certainly, we would want to know, I would have a local, I would call myself instead of going through a third party, and I would have a current BPO done on this, boots on the ground, and have a look and see what it looks like now. Any other questions, guys, on this particular asset?
Well, we had a question kind of concerning the difference when a foreclosure would be warranted as opposed to just a simple eviction on the land contract.
You know, here's the thing, and I'm somewhat familiar. You know, again, not an attorney, and as Eddie says, and don't play one on TV. But here's the situation with most land contracts. Land contracts were very, very popular in seller financing simply because it gave the seller some comfort, thinking that I am going to be able. I already have the deed to the property, so instead of me having a mortgage and note, where the borrower has the deed to the property, and of course I have the promissory note, I've got to sue them and go through the foreclosure process. So if I have the deed already, we're doing a land contract or a contract for deed, then I am going to circumvent and go all around that. And that does, it sounds great in theory, and right now, the way things are, typically, in most cases, the borrower is going to have, if they don't have a lot of equity in it, if they're underwater even on these things, they still have an equitable interest if they have owned them for a while, even if they are past due on these. And I wouldn't buy an asset thinking that I was just going to be able to quickly say, I've got the deed, you don't, so it's my house. I'm thinking, and the way I approach anything that I do with a land contract for deed is that I'm going to have to go through the legal process. And fortunately, Tennessee is one of those states that can be done very quickly, again, 30 to 40 days, and certainly less than a couple of $1,000s. So, and whether it's in Tennessee or if it's in Ohio or if it's in Missouri or if it's in Texas, typically, guys, we're going to have to go through that process, the foreclosure process, on any of these assets. And I think Eddie would agree with that, that it's not something that it's just going to be a slam dunk. We're going to have to go through the process and see where it is. So obviously we know that if the borrower was if this house is still occupied, certainly it would be eligible in Tennessee for hardest hit funds. There's up to $40,000 available as of September, October, which is the last time I looked. There was, like I said, about $180 million left in Tennessee. And by the way, those funds run out at the end of 2017. So that would certainly be available. Possible deed in lieu if the owner is actually living there, if we couldn't do the hardest hit funds. And then third would be foreclosure, which isn't a big deal either. I do know that in Tennessee that you are going to have to, and of course this is anywhere, the lender cannot talk directly to the borrower, and you will have to hire one of the servicing companies that is licensed in Tennessee to work with the borrower to work through the hardest hit funds. And I know for sure that FCI is licensed in Tennessee. I'm sure that Madison Management probably is as well. I'm sure that Peak is, but I do know for a fact that FCI is licensed in Tennessee to go through that process. So that's the way that looks. As far as values, would be subject to my own BPO before I would pull the trigger on this.
So, Joe, let me ask you a question.
Oh, yes.
So, say, for instance, at what point would you look at an asset like this and just simply say, okay, I'm going to talk to a National Asset Advisor who I know can be a servicer too, and basically they kind of can do the whole thing? Or at what point are you going to say, what I'm just saying as far as training was, a newbie as opposed to someone who's extremely seasoned, is there a point to where you would say it'd be easier to hand it off to someone who's going to be able to work through the process completely for you? Or is that something that you would say, you know, it's better to learn everything by elbow grease? What's your...
Matt, you know, that's a great question. And I can tell you that whether you're seasoned or non-seasoned in this part of the business, I think you always leave it to the professionals. You hire you choose whichever of the servicing companies that we have on our approved list at this point. I know that Peak is there, and Madison, and National Asset Advisors, and all of these guys are great in their own way. So I, you know, as far as trying to contact and do all of those other things, I think you should have a servicer work on this for you. And you want to make sure that it's done professionally and that you're not breaking any laws and so on. Now, I do have, on my side of it, I do have one thing, and I always, instead of having ordering a BPO through one of the servicing companies, which you can certainly do as well, the only thing about ordering a BPO through a servicing company is that you typically will not get a chance to talk to the guy or the gal that's going to go out and do the BPO. Now, order it through Madison or Peak, and they're going to go out, they're going to send out an agent and do it, and they're going to be in between you and the actual agent that goes out and does it. So I like to find, I'll make some phone calls to a few realtors in the area. I'll find one in an office that does BPOs. They will also have some knowledge of that particular area, and then at that point I would hire them to go out and give me an opinion of value on the property. I do tell them that when they go out, look, if you go out and you're afraid to get out of the car, I will pay you for the BPO, even though there was nothing there for you, because it's going to save me money in the long run. But if you do go out and the house is vacant, I want you to walk around the house and take pictures and yada, yada, yada. And I don't want you sitting in the front seat of the car if the house is vacant. Step out in the middle of the street and take pictures of that. So that's my opinion, and that's what I would look at, and that's what I do when I do when I'm trying to find out my valuation on a non-performing loan and getting a value on that, or even a performing loan. I'm going to find an agent that will do a BPO that I can talk to directly, because I want to talk to that person and being able to ask questions about the area and so on as it is. I mean, it's great. The websites are great. The technology is great. But there's nothing like talking to somebody that literally can walk and go to the house for me and give me an idea of what's going on.
And, Joe, I'll kind of have you look at the board to kind of catch up on some of those questions. But
okay,
as a suggestion, some of these BPOs, not all of them, but some of the BPOs have the agent's contact information that performed the BPO that you have possession of right now. Would you say that would be a good person to contact, or do you think you should have a second opinion kind of thing?
No, I think that you know, here's the thing. You get a good feel for folks when you're talking to them, and I know that Lisa says she has a great broker in Memphis that if anyone wants his contact information. And Lisa, if you want to type that in, I don't mind sharing it with the group. Really, Ray, as far as that goes, hold on just a second. Let's catch up with some of these. Can hardest hit funds be given where there's a land contract in place? You know, typically, Bob, it all depends on how that is viewed by the administrator of the Tennessee, Save My Home Tennessee, I believe is what it is. But there is a big push in all of the states where hardest hit funds are still available to get these out, because literally there's 24 more months to get this done, and typically there's a lot of money that needs to be gotten rid of, and the states really don't want to look bad at the end of the day. What is special about a special warranty deed? That is just used, Bill, to transfer ownership from one to the other of these entities that are buying this. So it's not a big deal. So foreclosure is needed. Yes, Connie, I would plan on foreclosure being needed, not just eviction. Okay, I would just always plan on that. Ray says, is there any way that you could validate occupancy beyond utilities? Not really. It's just one of those things that at the end of the day, if we end up with the property, is it going to be something we're going to be able to deal with? And it's going to, because it could be owner-occupied and we still have to foreclose on it, so it really wouldn't matter if they're there or not. We're going to make our decision to buy this not based on being able to apply and get hardest hit funds or get this thing modified for the borrower. We're going to buy it, and we're going to, you know, they're all a foreclosure and incubation. Okay. Let's see. That's Lisa. Who would you contact to get a BPO and request that they check interior as well? Tim, if there is no way that they are going to gain entrance to the property, if the property were vacant and the BPO agent will go into the yard and, you know, take some front and sides and so on, not all of them will do that, but there just isn't a way to check interior by having a BPO done. And if you ordered an appraisal, again, the owner of the property would have to give the appraiser and or the agent that's doing the BPO permission to come into the property, and that's highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. Let's see. Ed says, can an offer be made on the note, or is the price on the tape? Matt, you answered that, and the lowest price is what's on the tape there. Beth says, I have an ad hoc question about modification. Beth, let's swing back around to that in just a minute. Let's get these others, and then we'll kind of finish up the call with that. If it's a land contract, wouldn't they do a termination of land contract instead of a deed in lieu, since the borrower doesn't have a deed? That is correct. There could be a termination of land contract done, and that's just where it's just, you know, the owner doesn't have the deed anyway. The property owner doesn't have the deed anyway. But I can tell you, excuse me, that based on the sentiment in the country right now, as far as, let me have a drink here, that I don't see you being able to do a termination of the land contract. I really do see, and you should count on and even budget for having to foreclose on any of these assets. Ray, is it safe to say that the BPO would only be requested after you signed a letter of intent? And yes, I agree with that. Yes, you would. Once you sign the letter of intent, you order your own BPO, and whether you're dealing with Colonial or you're dealing with one of the hedge funds, yes, I would only order the BPO after we have it under contract. That's correct. Charlie, let's see, when you do order your own PPO, do you have to get the asset under contract first? No, you do not. I would suggest you do, simply because there could be somebody else that already has it under contract. I mean, these things are being, it could be there one hour, and the next hour it could be gone. So I wouldn't spend $100 or $80 or $125 or whatever the BPO is going to cost you. I wouldn't spend that money on it until I do have it under contract. And Lisa, Woodyard Realty, good realtor in Memphis, Woodyard, Woodyard Realty, and ask for Steve Woodyard, Woodyard. He is the tell him that Lisa Hankinson sent you, and he will charge you twice what he actually would charge anybody else. I'm kidding, Lisa. I love you. It's always great when you can drop a name, and Lisa would be one of those names you could certainly drop. Okay, super. How and where do you validate plat info? You know, once you have that done, once you have the title search done and so on, really that should suffice, and I've never done anything any further than that. All right, so Beth, let's unmute Beth real quick, Matt, and let's see what kind of modification question.
Hi, Joe. I just had kind of a quick question for you that came up, and that is, if you are planning, if one of your exit strategies or your exit strategy is to modify the loan and then sell it once it's reperforming,
correct?
Do you have to get an RMLO to do the modification?
You know, Beth, that's a good question. And there are several opinions on that. Let me start with the first one there. You know, the whole deal kind of took place, and the RMLO situation came up in full force January 10th of 2015. So we're a year and a couple of days over that. It is the opinion of some attorneys and some in the business that you would not need to have an RMLO doing it, because you are modifying, typically lowering the unpaid balance, and you could be lowering the interest rate on a loan that was created prior to January 10th, 2015. There are some that say, you know, be on the safe side and do it. I can tell you that my opinion, and again, don't do this because this is my opinion, But I do believe that since it was originated prior to, that it wouldn't require that. Now, if you feel that that would be something that would be necessary, then you could certainly do that. On the other side of that, though, is before you modify, I mean, of course, you're not going to, what would an RMLO do? They would take a 1003 residential loan app, they would check credit, they would verify employment, income, and more specifically, the debt-to-income ratio needing to be 44% or less on the overall debt-to-income. So, having said that, we know the credit is going to be bad anyway. So then the only other part of that would be to verify their income and their employment and then make sure that that debt-to-income ratio fits into that category of 44% or less. Does that make sense? I mean, I know that I didn't say do it one way or do it the other, but the key with everything, and you know even with SAFACT, is that you can make your own credit decision, even if you're, you know, if you've got a 500 credit score and I want to work with you, and the key to all of that is that debt to income ratio, and that's really the intent of the law, is that, you know, can these folks afford to pay the monthly payment?
Okay.
So I always do that. I always verify employment and income. Which means I get copies of pay stubs, W-2s, even a tax return before I move forward with that. So I say, Beth, how much can you afford to pay? And you say, I can afford to pay $700 a month, all in, P-I-T-I. So then I'm going to say, okay, let me see what you have and what you owe. And you could even have a credit report ordered on the folks as well, and do it that way, and then you could verify what their debts that are going to show on their credit report would be anyway, even to calculate that debt to income ratio.
Okay, one more question for you. If the loan was initiated after January of 2014. And that was done by an RMLO, would you feel that it's a slam dunk that you'd have to do an RMLO to do the modification, or would it be the opposite because it was originated by a
lawyer? You know, here's the thing. No, I would still. Apparently, if it was originated January 15th, 2015, 5 days after it was done, they default in October of 2015, then the question would be, did they lose their job? Did they somebody have a sickness? So that's going to affect your debt-to-income ratio. So my first step would be, if they were delinquent at that point, is I would see if I'd look and see if it was in a hardest-hit fund state, and then I would have them apply through the proper channels for hardest-hit funds. And then I wouldn't do any modification if it were in one of those states and they wanted to keep the house. Even if you modified the loan a year and a half ago and wanted to go in and check on that again. So, you know, I just believe you need to cover your back, you need to cover your assets. So I'm checking to make sure that the debt-to-income ratio is good, and most of these things are, let's face it, were originated back in 07, 08, 09, 10, so it was certainly way before SAFACT came around.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
So I'm just, you know, that's what I'm doing, is I'm verifying, I'm getting copies of the pay stubs, W-2s, tax returns, and modifying based on that. And it could be that based on that, I really shouldn't modify it for them because they really can't make the payment. And I think it's Eddie that always says that sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind. So don't just think that just because you can modify it and they're saying they can make the payment, that they're going to be able to do that. All you're doing is kicking the can down the road, waiting to have to redo it sometime in the future.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome, Beth. Take care. All right. What else do we have, Matt? I know we got through all the questions there.
Hey, Jeff.
Any hands raised?
Not right now, but I do have a question. So, okay. If someone has created a non-Dodd-Frank compliant loan, and they are said they've created more than the three loans that they're allowed, and they didn't use an RMLO, and they have an asset that needs a modification on it, and you use an RMLO to you do that modification, do you then cure the Dodd-Frank compliance issue?
Wow, that's a good lawyer would certainly be able to argue that fact. You know, the thing is it's not going to make a difference whether you used an RMLO or not if they never default. It's only going to make a difference if they default on the loan. And then if it's after 3 years, then it won't make any difference either, because that first 3 year period, if they don't default over that first 3 year period and you haven't done originated the loan to SAFAC standards, then there's not an issue. But the challenge is that we're a year and a few days into this thing, and I'm not sure, I've not seen anything as far as case law with anybody suing somebody having to sue a lender based on a default and then not having done it. So it's going to take a couple of years for this to wash out. I know that the Seller Finance Coalition is working with to get some of this changed. There's an indication that we can start adding a balloon back into a loan now and it still be SAFAC compliant. And that was simply because there was enough lobby by smaller banks that said, hey, if we're just not going to do any loans at all if we've got to do that, and if we can't put a balloon in there. So the decision was made that if a small lender is classified as somebody that makes 2,000 or less loans per year, that they wouldn't have to comply with that and could put a balloon in there with the caveat that says, if you know good and well when you put the balloon in there that they're not going to be able to take it out or refinance it when the loan balloons, then you shouldn't put it in there. So there's a lot of things going on there. There's no case law to go after, and that's really what it's all about. Beth did say for resale of a loan, it's going to matter if it's Dodd-Frank compliant, and you're exactly right. Beth is exactly right. Guys, if you are going to, whether you're seller financing or whatever it is, when you're on the performing side, Colonial would never buy a loan that was originated after January 10th of 2015 that wasn't Dodd-Frank compliant. Just not going to happen. Whether the buyer quits paying or not, they're not going to buy it. Please talk about the balloon. Eddie talked about it yesterday. And he indicated that we would not add a balloon. You know, and I understand why Eddie said that, because I can tell you that the indication is that the borrower would not be able to take out the balloon. And see, therein lies the rub. Now, if I owned a small bank, and I was dealing with, why would I go to a small bank or a credit union? Maybe my credit's good, but I'm self-employed, and I may have a great income. My credit's good, and there would be an indication there that I would be able to take the balloon out. But on the other side of that, if I were a small lender, and the small lender said, your credit is really bad now, I can't see you being able to take this out when you need to, when the balloon comes due. So there would be no reason to do that. So, Keith, unless you had a super strong buyer, borrower, there would be no reason to even put a balloon in there, because at the end of the day, there just wouldn't be a play there. So that's my opinion, and yes, Matt, don't move that yet. I'll be glad to do that. Hold on a sec. Matt, what else do we have? Is that it?
Excuse me. Yes, that is all that we had as far as content-wise, but I didn't know if you wanted to kind of go over our tape, kind of what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you talk about that? I know that there will be a tape. The tape is going to have – how many assets do you think is going to be on that tape, Matt?
I was trying to look at it now. I think it was close to right around 100 or so. When we sent it out to Titanium, there have been some purchases on that. So my stuff's frozen right now. But, I think around 100, I think, something like that. 40 or so, 30 or so non-performers, probably 40. And I'm guessing here, don't yell at me, but probably about 40 or so performing, and then some REOs, about 15 or 20 REOs in there. That'll be put up after this call today, right around probably before 5 o'clock, but no later than 5 o'clock Central Standard Time.
5 o'clock. What time? Pacific time.
Central. It's 5 o'clock now. So as soon as this call's over, I'm putting it up basically. So.
Okay, so Sullivan, you're talking to the guy that's going to do it. So yeah, you're going to post him up. So there you go. Take a look at the assets that are available. Guys, I know if you haven't finalized your New Year's resolution, and I know that resolutions, and I know that sounds corny to a lot of people, but listen, unless you put it in writing and commit to it and take the steps that you need to take to get to achieve your goals, it's never going to work. So please take a look at it. I know I have mine, and I'm sure, Matt, you have yours, and I do them for myself and for my marriage and for my kids and for my business. So I try to do them for every part of my life, and I haven't broke any of them yet. So there you go. Guys, it's thanks for being on the call today. Kevin will be on the call tomorrow afternoon, and then I will talk to you guys Thursday on the performing call, Thursday around lunchtime. Matt, thanks so much. I appreciate you, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Have a good one, Jeff.